It's written for today. For today. Okay, so before we go back into the psukim, do you remember last week we were up to, we read the third set of the brachas, the third set of the blessings that Bilam had given to the Jewish people. Beautiful brachas, but as we said, from the blessings, you could see what he intended to say, the negative that he had in his mind. So we can interpret all the terrible things that he really wanted to say. But as we mentioned, and also that most of the things that he said, all the brachas, unfortunately what ended up happening, the brachas did come true and will come, some will still come true, but as well as the brachas coming true, the negative intentions also came true, except for one of the psukim, the one that we say every single day, Matovu Ayalecha Yaakov, how goodly are your tents, O Yaakov, your dwelling places, O Israel. We say that every single day, and that's one of the most famous verses of the brachas of Bilam. That one has not been transformed. That one remains steady, a bracha forever. Now today, what we're going to see is, before we go back into the next, the last set, which are absolutely magnificent. The last set, the fourth set of brachas that Bilam gives, is about the time of Mashiach. And that's what we're really, really waiting for. And that's really what we need to see play out right now. But before we get into that, I want to see one more insight into understanding what is so special about this bracha of Matayvu, and why do I say that that's the one that is there forever as a bracha, and there's no klala in it. He wanted that the Jewish people shouldn't have these houses of worship. He wanted that the Jewish people shouldn't have Hashem resting in their homes. That the Jewish people shouldn't feel a sense of community, as you talk about community. That's what the houses of prayer, the houses of study provide. They provide a place where we come together and we unite and we realize who we really are. That we are one community, that we have to be there for each other. That has never left the Jewish people. If it has, it's only been temporarily. But we've always been able to fall back on that. And that's what we're going to see. So let's see what the Nesivas Shalom. This is the first page. As we promised last time, we didn't... Oh, I'm sorry. I'll share the screen. We didn't do this. This was the last thing that we had to do. And as I said, such hashgacha pratis, that this is really connected to the time of the Sfiras HaOmer that we're in now. Even though, what does Parshas Balak have to do with Sfiras HaOmer? Nothing directly. Let's see an insight that the Nesivas Shalom tells us, which speaks to us for today, and a very strong message for all of us. And we shouldn't, sometimes, I guess it's just more comfortable for us. We tend to look at these things as like global, you know, like everybody should be doing. But what we really need to do when we learn is take it personally and see what we can do to improve ourselves. Not necessarily will we be able to change the whole world and the whole Jewish nation, but we can just change our own little self. So let's see the message for each and every one of us. Okay, so here he says, on the top in the Nesivas Shalom, "Uba'ayid oifen," so it's on your page, the first page, and in another way, "Yesh leimar ha'inyan," we can explain this matter, "al pi madichsiv vayar es Yisrael." What did Bilam do when he was looking at the Jewish nation and he saw them, Sheichem l'shvatav, how they were camped according to their tribes, as we went into depth a few weeks ago, Vatehi alav ruach alikim, and the spirit of Hashem was upon him. And in truth, what caused him to have this incredible vision was because he saw the Jewish people the way they were camped. Now we mentioned many things of what that means, but let's just take it simply. They were camped in a way that they were together. And not only were they together, but they had houses of worship, holy homes, homes which had Hashem's presence revealed within it. Let's see what that signifies. So he says, Kaychais ha-sitra akra, so the powers of the negativity of ha-tuma, kol shlitasam eina ela al hayakid. This is an important foundational concept. When we talk about impurity, negativity, even like the Yetzirah, and all the things that pull us in the wrong direction, when do they rest upon us? When do they have power over us? When we are acting as an individual. When we're on our own. Aval, al harabim, but when we are united, when we are together, when we are as a community, ein lahem kol shlita, they have no power. The impurity has no power over a whole community. There's actually a fascinating halacha. You know, there's a halacha when it comes to Pesach. It says that if somebody is impure, right, they can't bring the carbon Pesach. But what happens if the entire community is impure? Tumah, there's a very interesting thing it says in halacha, tumah hutra b'tzibur, that in a congregation, impurity becomes permissible because there's no such thing as impurity when it's a congregation. What, how that really works spiritually, it doesn't matter so much. The point is that Hashem said that, that Hashem decided that. It really has to do with the fact that when we are united, we are such a strong force that any impurity immediately becomes like nothing. Even if it's there, it becomes negligible. Okay, so therefore, what does that mean? Umi shemekusha leklal Yisrael, a person who remains connected to the entire congregation, the ein yachid b'fnei atzman, doesn't remain an individual, ein alav shlitas hadinim v'kaychas hasitra achra. He doesn't have any of the powers of judgment, that we're talking about harsh judgment, and all of the impurities have no power over him. Because the individual at that point has the strength of the entire congregation, that sweetens all the judgments. The rak hayachid, only an individual, an individual who's not connected and actually separates himself from the congregation, Allah shayrim dinim. So upon him, the judgment can rest, and the power of the impurity, unfortunately at that point, can have an effect on him. And that's what Bilam saw. Vizehu, that's what it means. Vayares Yisrael Sheikhin Lishvatov. He saw the Jewish people, how they were resting according to their tribes. Sheroas HaKlal Yisrael Me'ayse Shekulam Bilev Echad Ki Ish Echad. Right, he saw them as one nation with one heart. Sha'oz ain the klalish shlita aleim, and then he realized, oh my God, all the curses I want to say, it's going to go nowhere. It's not going to have any power on them. And then vatihi alav ruach el Hashem levarcham. What happened? He got the spirit of Hashem to bless them when he saw the way they were camped, the fact that they were united, and that's what it says. That's why it says. Remember, we read it previously. That we don't see any sin amongst Yaakov, v'loy ra'am al b'Yisrael, and we don't see any iniquity amongst the Jewish people. Hashem alei kavimai, right? That Hashem, their God, is with them. The avayin v'chet shayach rak etzel hayochid. When we are talking about sins, and sins that will bring negative consequences, that's on the individual. She'enay mekusher, the one who's not connected to Klal Yisrael. Aval beklolus Yaakov Yisrael lo hibit oven. But when the Jewish people are united, then Hashem doesn't look. He doesn't scrutinize. And that's why we know this. That's the beautiful thing about, like, for example, Yom Kippur, especially, people try to daven with a minyan, right? I mean, davening with a minyan is always good. But, you know, even in the shtetl, when the way the Jewish people used to live, and if they lived on their own, they would travel to a town that had a minyan, even if they lived on a farm, for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, the time of judgment. Because when you daven with others, when you unite with others, your individual negative things don't stand out anymore. And what takes over, what's overpowering, is the good that everybody is doing. And that covers all the individual little negative things that might be happening in every individual's life. So yeah, that's what he says. That's what Bilam saw. So let's see what will that connect. Let's go a little bit deeper. And then he says, Ki b'chlal Yisrael ein chet ve'ein pesha. Because when we're talking about Klal Yisrael, there's no sin. V'tamid Hashem alekechem imohem, and Hashem is always with them. And that's why he said, Ma toivu alecha Yaakov mishkan aisecha Yisrael. What does that mean? He says, what are they referring to? Eilu batei knesiyes ubatei medrashes. These are the shuls and the places that people go to learn. Shabatei knesiyes ubatei medrashes he mekaymes ha'achdus shel Klal Yisrael. These are the places that people come together to learn. You can learn at home, that's also good, but you can learn together. Where do you learn together? When you come to a shul, when you come to a base medrash. Then you are uniting with others. And he says, They are united, they learn and they daven together. He says, Yehudi eino yachid, ki im chelek bilti nifrad miklal Yisrael. And what happens is that at that point, the Jew is not an individual, rather he is just an indivisible part from the rest of the nation. He becomes united and very, very strong. Zois ratza bilam lebatel mehem. That's what Bilam wanted to take away from them. He saw this. He saw this special secret. And he said, I have one way of getting into them. I will divide them. They've tried it all the years. They've learned from Bilam. This is the best way. The best way to get us is to divide us. And Bilam really wanted to implant this division in amongst the Jewish people. And he says, L'hachriv es ha'olam shel klal Yisrael. He wanted to destroy what we call the world of the klal Yisrael, right? The Jewish people as a community. The yu rak yechidim, that they should become individuals. V'az yuchlo ha'klal es lochol aleim. You know, then all the curses he wants, he'll be able to say it and it'll actually have an effect on them. V'lekach ratzel levatel es batei ha'knesiyos v'ha'medrashos. So he thought, what's the best way to cause division? Maybe I will make the shuls disappear, the Beis HaMedrash disappear. I'll make it be that there's no places where they get together, no places where they unite together, no times they come together. They should just do things on their own. Perfect. I'll be able to have all the negative effect that I want to have. I'll be able to do it. So what happens? V'zeh kfar eitza klolis levatel klol klolis. She'enam rak hasher Yehudi menutak min kairay, v'loi bi yosei mekusha leklal Yisrael, ha'dovuk tamid b'Hashem Yisparech, she'koyach zeh mevatel kol hadinim. So he says, because as we know, when we are together, well, then we have the power of, as we said, the klal, and then we are always connected to Hashem, and when we have that connection to Hashem, whatever curse he's going to want, it's going to have no effect. Whatever they want, scheme, it's not going to do anything. And that's why also, when this we didn't get to, next week or the week after we will, we know what happened. After Bilam saw that he tried to curse them so many times over, and every time instead of curses, out came brachas. So he has to think of a different way, right? Because he was hired to do something, right, by the king, because the king was afraid of the Jewish people. So how is he going to get, how is he going to help Balak to make sure that the Jewish people are not a threat to the nation of Moab? So remember what he does afterwards. This is the worst part. He comes up with this terrible idea, and it was a smart idea, to get the Jewish people to sin. And what was the sin? The sin was the immorality, right? They sent out the girls from Moab, and then the Jewish people sinned. And once they sinned, then they were vulnerable, right? So that was a big problem. But initially what he tried to do before that was to try and divide them. That was his first plan, because that's the best plan. That's like the best way to get them. But that didn't work. So that's what he says. He says over here. So first, so he tried to get them to sin both with Avodah Zarah, with idol worship, the Balpar. It was Nus B'nois Mayav, right? The immorality that he would cause them to have with the daughters of Mayav. Sherotzel Enat Kim Bazeh Gam Me'Hashem Yisparach Tu. He wanted to separate them from Hashem and also from the rest of the Jewish people. Because he says, Ki Al Yidein Yonim Elu, through these two things, serving idols and immorality, what do they affect? They affect, as he says, one of them is faith, and one of them is taiva, desire, right? These are the two things that he was going to try and get them to stumble in. He says, Misrachek Yehudi Miklal Yisrael. Both of those things also cause us to be separate from the nation, from the klal. How? How does it cause division? So he says, because Sha'az Raya Al Kulam Pigamim. Because what happens when we start to stumble in faith and we don't trust and we don't have emunah, or we stumble because we're having a lot of desires and things that we want, it actually causes us to see other people, fascinatingly, not only ourselves, do we do wrong, but then we start to see negative in others. We all know this is human nature. When we make mistakes, what do we tend to do? We see those mistakes in others. First of all, it psychologically makes sense because it's much more comfortable. You know, when we make a mistake, we don't want to be the only one. It's just, I'm not the only bad one. But also because when you're living in that world, when that's your reality, that's what you see. So you start to see it in others. You start to see negatives in others. And that's what Bilam was trying to do. He was trying to get us down. Another key thing is, it's such an important thing to remember now, one of the ways that, unfortunately, we stumble, like we become, if you want to say, we become almost so vulnerable, is when we think less of ourselves. Not only ourselves individually, we're saying ourselves as a Jewish nation. Because once we start thinking, oh, we're not worthy, we're not good, look how many mistakes we make, look how bad we are, what ends up happening is, first of all, we see bad in ourselves, so then we just give up. Become apathetic and we say there's no hope. We see negative in other people. It creates this terrible division and it actually gets everything down. It's a downward spiral. And what ends up happening is that we say there's no hope, there's no point. What's the point of it all? And you just don't try. And that's why one of the biggest things, especially now, I think with the media, that's one thing we talk about, the media and all the lies, there's a lot of negatives about it. But one of the biggest negatives is that they put into us a feeling of despair. Despair is the worst thing. If you start to despair, it's all hopeless. You don't keep going. You don't keep trying. You don't feel a sense of responsibility for yourself and for others. And that's what I feel people say, what everybody who's come back from Israel says, the people there, they have that sense of urgency, of doing. Nobody's despairing, I mean, they can't afford to, right? Is that true? I think that's it. Mamish, yeah, they do. You're doing, it's like a sense of urgency, a sense of what can I do? Why? Because, and they have hope still. There's still hope when you have that. There's hope, and it's not only out of desperation. It's out of a feeling of strength. It's out of a feeling of real emunah, that we are Hashem's nation, and that we are still here, as we've said, thousands of years after all, everything's happened, and we're going to keep going. So we are not allowed to despair. We are not allowed to. And we're not allowed to give up on ourselves, and not on the people around us. That's the biggest, biggest thing. That's what they try to do, you know, the world. Whichever negative forces there are, that comes into the world, tries in different ways. Let's see how we come back here. So he says, and that's why he wanted to make them sin these two things, because he says, what will happen? They will actually be separate from each other and also separate from Hashem. Then all the curses can actually have an effect on them. And what did Pinchas do? I know we didn't get there, but we're going to learn. But just an interesting pasuk that shows us that this is for sure the key, because what does it say about Pinchas, right? He restored the honor, right? He killed Zimri, and he brought everybody back to realize that they're making a mistake. He did something very sharp, and it made them realize. But what is the words that's used? It says, Al yidei mesiras nafshei, hichzir es hasholim b'machane Hashem. What did Pinchas do? He restored the peace into the congregation of Israel, and that's why the bracha that's given to Pinchas, it says, Vehinani noisein loy es brisi shalom. I will give him my covenant of peace. It's a funny word. Pinchas did quite an act of whatever. He killed somebody. And yet he did it to restore the peace. Which means that what was the negative? The fact that there wasn't peace. And now through Pinchas the peace comes back. And this is what Bilam sees. Bilam sees the secret. Now, I want to show you something absolutely beautiful. Let's see on top here. We go to the second column. V'yesh loyma. Shechav dalet elif. How many dots? It was such a sad thing. Like I said, we didn't learn this. We will. We'll go more in depth then. But unfortunately, Bilam's plan was quite a good one. And when those girls went out and the Jewish people sinned, they sinned both with the girls and serving idols. That's what the girls convinced them to do. They were sinning this Baal Par. What happened at that point? 24,000 Jews actually died in a plague, right? Just before Pinchas went and killed Zimri, and that stopped the plague, right? That's what happened. Well, Aaron's, whatever it was. But the point is that the plague stopped. But 24,000 members of the Jewish people actually died there. And it says, what were they? They were hayechidim. They were individuals. Hamenutokim miklal Yisrael. They separated themselves from the congregation. And therefore they didn't have that power of that guardianship, of that watchfulness, of that special protection that Hashem gives us when we remain part of the klal. And therefore he says, a very fascinating thing. He brings from the Arizal, so this is Sefer HaGilgulim, the Arizal wrote, And very interesting. And the Arizal there says, Shechof Dalet Elef, Talmidei Rabbi Akiva. Right? We said, we're in the Sphira. We just said the number 24,000. That's in the Chumash. They died at this story of the Baal Pa'ar, of the sinning here, right after our Parsha. But there's also another 24,000. Those are the students of Rabbi Akiva. And the Arizal, and that's 1,000 years later. I mean, that's much, much later. More than 1,000 years later. 1,500 years later. But the Arizal says that these 24,000 students of Rabbi Akiva that died, we know why they died. There it was very simple. They didn't treat each other with respect. It says whatever that means. On their level, right? They didn't treat each other with respect. That's why they died. These are the same neshamas, the same souls of those 24,000 that had died in the desert when they did this terrible sin, came back reincarnated as the students of Rabbi Akiva, unfortunately made, obviously, a similar mistake on a different level, because they didn't sin with other women, they didn't commit the idol worship, adultery, no. But they didn't treat each other with respect. So let's see, what's the connection? Just 24,000, that's enough of a connection? What's the Arizal saying? So the Arizal tells us, he says, so we need to understand, what's the connection between these 24,000 and these 24,000? In the desert they died because they did such terrible sins. I mean, these are heavy sins. Ashel Baal Pa'ar, Vizindos B'nais Mayav, right? Idol worship and immorality. V'ilu Talmidei Rabbi Akiva, Kol Chatam Hoya Rak, Shalei Nagu Kaveid Zebazeh. The only sin that we find by the students of Rabbi Akiva is that they weren't respectful one to the other. So he says, what's the connection? Why should, how are they the same? Umashayach Lid Muslim, how can we compare them? Achin Al Piha Amor, Deshoyresh Hatgam Shalach Haftalit, Elef Shemesuba Magefa. But when we look deeper and we see what's the source, what is it that made them able in the time in the desert? What caused them to actually stumble and do these terrible sins of idol worship and adultery and everything else that you can imagine? Terrible sins. What was the initial problem that they had? What is it that made them, what weakness did they possess that made them disposed to be able to do these terrible sins? He says, because hayomachmas shahayu yichidim bifnei atzman, because they considered themselves individuals. They didn't associate with the klal. That doesn't mean they didn't get together, but it meant that they held themselves apart. On some level inside, whether it came from an arrogance, they felt they weren't part. I know what's right, everybody else is doing the wrong thing, I know what's the right thing, and they disassociated themselves. They considered themselves individuals. This was the problem. And he says, therefore, obviously, on a much different level, but in a similar vein, this was the sin of the students of Rabbi Akiva, where they considered themselves that they knew the right way, as we know, they knew how to interpret what Rabbi Akiva was teaching, they knew what Torah wanted, and everybody else around them is misinterpreting, right? That's how they said it. Therefore, they made themselves into individuals and didn't feel a part of the cloud. So he says, "Shahayu amnam kedoshim." So it's true they were holy, utahirim and pure. Avalei nohagu kaveid zeh bazeh, but they didn't act, as we say, respectfully one to the other. Umitoychach loyhayu meuchadim mukusharim. So they weren't united. They weren't connected. Elokol echad hayu yachid b'fnei atzma. Each one was an individual on their own. Imkain sharu aleihem dinim, and therefore, because of that, all the heavy judgment was able to have an effect on them. Nenshu, and they were punished. And he says a very beautiful thing. He says, not beautiful, actually sharp, but it's a very powerful concept. It says, from one of the great Chassidic Rebbes in Poland, he says like this, Ka'asher reitzin min ha-shamayim la'anish Yehudi. When Hashem wants to punish a Jew from heaven, what does he do? Machnisin by tainas umainas al-rabba. The first thing he does is, implants in the person's head some complaints about their teachers, about their rabbis, about the leaders. They're not doing things right. Oh, I could do whatever. As we all know, we don't have to elaborate. And then, he says, that's the first thing they do.
And then Kasha writes him on Misha Yesa when you want to punish him more, Machnisin by Tainus ala Chabura. Then you put complaints into him about the Chabura, meaning the people that he learns with, or the people he connects to, the congregation, the community that he's in, his Chabura. And then when they want to punish him even more, then what is the final clap separates him from his friend, you know, the one that you actually really are connected to, your real friend, so to speak, and you start to find all kinds of things that's wrong with your friend and why they're doing things wrong, and that's the final clap. And what happens then, you know? Then he says, because when we are connected to the congregation, because when we remain connected, we have a special protection. In other words, what this means is that even if we do deserve to be punished, we've done things wrong, but when we remain connected, we have a protection. And we are not punished. Hashem watches over us. He sort of overlooks a lot of the small things that we're doing wrong, and rather he looks at us as a whole. And he says, oh, well, what a beautiful nation I have. Well, the truth is, that is true. We all wonder what Hashem wants to see more, because the truth is that we are a beautiful nation, and we are there for each other. And that's what we have to remember. So as I said, not to look at general, look at us individually, as he said over here, what can we do in our own selves, in our own lives, to improve how we relate to our own, as we said, even the people closest to us, and then the community, and then the Jewish people at large. But to not in our own minds ever feel I'm better, or I'm different, or I can't connect, or I'm not one, it's the worst thing that we can do. We have to make sure to retain that connection. And that's why he says, that's why when Hashem wants to punish us, he puts all kinds of questions and all kinds of difficulties, right? Oh, it's so difficult, and look how bad they are. So that this way we separate. And then Hashem can punish us. We know Torah is eternal. So what we learn from this parsha, as Gaidel Kaichel Kaicha Rabin, the tremendous strength of the congregation, Shehu Hashmira Hayeser Gedela B'chola Anyanim Hagashmiim V'Haruchmiim. This is the greatest protection that we could provide for ourselves, physically and spiritually. V'Afilu Keneged Klipas Bilam, even against the Klipa of Bilam. And we know that the Klipa of Bilam is one of the worst. Why do I say that? Because as we said, we compared that Bilam is compared to Moshe Rabbeinu, so to speak, on the negative side. And we know Moshe was the greatest prophet that lived. So Bilam has power on the negative side. How do we protect ourselves from the negativity of Bilam? And he does have power. There's only one way. In this bracha that he gave us the key. Matoivu oyhalecha Yaakov. And you want to see something beautiful in the actual words. We say it every single day. He says this is the idea of Achdus. Let's see. He says, that's why it's written. I know in Hebrew you can understand it better. But if you wanted to say that he saw many tents, right? So what should he have said? Matoivu oyhalechem. Right? Oyhalechem. Your tents in the plural. What does he say? Oyhalecha, which is in the singular. Singular. That's what we have to remember every single day when we say Matoivu in the morning. It's the singular. It's not, okay, we all live in our individual homes, but we really are one. We are one. It's not my home, your home. It's the Jewish nation is one family. Sometimes we live in a different house, but we're one family. Oy halecha, as he says, Mishkanoy secha, not Mishkanoy sechem. Again, in the singular. Why? To show us, this is the whole trick. This is the whole thing, to remember to remain united. Hashem will transform the curse into a blessing. This shows us on the unity of the Jewish people. This is the key. how to counteract all of the curses physically and spiritually. When we unite with one heart as one man, right, this is the best protection, as we said, from all the negativity of Bilam and all the powers of the Sitra Achra. The gam b'maksovim hagruyim v'hakashim, and in the most difficult, the most challenging situations that we find ourselves, which I think we can say now we are definitely in a difficult time. Tamid oimed lahem liYisrael kayach his kashrusam keechad. What does remain is this power that we have to be connected, to be united. B'batei knesiyes u'b'batei medrashas amegin aleihem b'chol hametzavim, that will protect us in all of our situations. This is why, as he says, it's connected to the students of Rabbi Akiva. This is one of the big things that we say in Sfiras HaEmer, fascinating thing. You know the word Sfiras HaEmer, literally Sfira to count. But you know the word Sfira has many depths. Everything is deep. What does the word Sfira mean? Even hasapir, it's a sapphire. We are illuminating. Illuminating, what are we illuminating? Ourselves, which means we are looking deeper into our neshama and seeing we're all one. We're illuminating the Jewish nation. We are a beautiful nation and we're there for each other. We are one family. Illuminating also means that we are refining ourselves. We're clarifying everything. We're making ourselves to really see what is real and what is fake. In other words, all the shtusim that divide us, they're nothing. That's meaningless, silly stuff. The real things are what unite us. And this is the way we prepare. We all know what happened when they got to Har Sinai. That's the one place that says, Vayichan, right? The Jewish people camped, singular. That's where we were. Ki'ish echad b'lev echad. We were taka as one man with one heart. Even though, unfortunately, Rashi points out there that the reason it's so stressed, this concept of Vayichan Shom Yisrael, the Jewish people camped there, right? And Har Sinai was because, in a way, that was the only place they were united. But nevertheless, what it means is that we have that power. We can do it. And that's what we're counting towards now, right? Today was the 34th day. We're getting closer to Shavuos. We're almost there, but it's even before Shavuos. It's on Rosh Chodesh Sivan, 6 days before Shavuos. So it's very, very soon that we get to that stage where we have the ability to really feel and reveal in ourselves we are really one. And then we say, Bilam and all the world, whatever you want to say about us, whatever you want, it's meaningless. It's like, as you say, water off a duck's back. It's nothing. It will not affect us. It has zero effect on us. Because we have the special protection from Hashem. So it's just a very, I know it was a bit lengthy the way he said, but it's just so beautiful. So there's something for us. We can all work on whichever way, improve the connection. That's what's very, very, very important. And this will make all of the brachas that Bilam gave come true as brachas, not in the negative sense. Okay. Go to the next page, and now we really read all these brachas. Now, not the whole brach, we read the third set. What I'd like to see is the reaction. On the third set, we saw how he was described, remember we mentioned describing the Jewish people as a lion, and that we're so strong, even when we're sleeping, we're like a lion. Remember last week we said, even when we're sleeping, even in Golus, we're a lion. And nobody starts up with a lion. We are strong even when we are sleeping. So this is what we have to remember now. We are strong now as well. This is something important. We have to have that pride, the pride that we are a lion. But he said it, right? Ka'ari, you kalavi, me, you kumena, right? Who's going to be able to get us up? Nobody's going to knock us down. So when we have all of these brachas, we know we have that strength. But now, just think of, now we're going back to the original story. Bilam is standing there on the mountain, overlooking the Jewish people. Next to him is the king, Balak, who is the king of Maya, who hired him, right? And he wanted to hear terrible curses, and he only heard blessings. This is the third chance. So what does Balak say? So if you look on page 307 there, in Pasuk Yud, obviously, Vayichar af Balak el Bilam. So Balak's anger flared up against Bilam. Vayispike eskapov. Here you can see he just reacts with so much anger. He clapped his hands. So you could just imagine, you could just hear it, how he would have clapped his hands with such anger at Bilam. What did you do? Not only didn't you curse them, but you blessed them, which means you strengthened them. These are the people we're so afraid of. They're standing at our border and we're petrified. And now you've given them more strength. So he's really not impressed. Okay, and what does he do? As he says, La kayv ayvai krasicha. To curse my enemies did I summon you. V'hine beirachta barech. Oh my gosh, and behold, what do we know? You have continually blessed them. Se shalosh pa'amim. Now three times. And we all know in Torah, three is a good number. That means it's for sure, it has an effect, right? As we say, what do we say? Three? It's a chazaka. It's no question, it's going to happen. Okay? Now he tells him, v'ata, so now you better, brach lecha, look what he says to him, brach, run, run for your life, run, el mekaymecha, to your place. Amarti, he says, I said, Balak said, I said, kabed achabet, sorry, achabetcha, I said, I will honor you. But Hashem has withheld you from honor because out of your mouth came brachas instead of klolos. So now you better run. You should be so embarrassed of yourself, what you've done, and run away. Interesting. Okay, let's go to the next page. So Bilam says to Balak, Haloi gamel el malachecha asher shalachta elai. Did I not speak to your messengers whom you sent to me saying, do you remember, when the messengers came to call Bilam, what did he say? I'm only going to be able to say what Hashem tells me to say. So Bilam is saying, I told you. I told you. Whatever. Okay, even though he himself was so intent on cursing the Jewish people. So he says, I told them, in Yitaini Balak Mulai Besai Kesef Ezov, even if Balak gives me his whole house full of gold and silver, Lo Yuchalavai Despi Hashem, I will not be able to transgress the word of Hashem. In other words, I can only say what Hashem tells me to say, Lasais Toiva Ira, to do bad or to good or bad, Milibi, from my heart, Asher Yedaber Hashem, Oisai Adaber. What Hashem says, that's what I shall speak, right? So in other words, even though, as he implies here, in my heart, I really am on your side, I wanted to say negative things, not in my control, I can't help it. I'm only in Hashem's control. Here he had to really admit that he's in Hashem's control, and now he doesn't leave yet. There's one more thing that comes out. So what comes out now is interesting, because now we will see the most beautiful bracha of all comes out now. It's actually quite difficult to read these sukkim. In other words, the sentence structure is very hard. It doesn't matter, but the meaning is beautiful. These are not the most famous parts, but this is the one place in the Chumash that, according to the Rambam, we have a prophecy of Mashiach in the Chumash. You know, most of the prophecies of Mashiach that we have are from the Navi Yeshayahu, right? That's what Christians quoted a lot. Yirmiyahu, the Jeremiah, right? That's much later. But from the Chumash itself, we have very little revealed talking about Mashiach. Even though Mashiach, as we know, is one of the fundamental beliefs that carries us through, as one of the 13 Animamins, as the Rambam says. But it's one of the fundamental beliefs that have always been there with the Jewish people, because we say this is the purpose of creation. The purpose of creation is that Hashem should be revealed in the world, right? That the world should be in a state of Mashiach. That's what Mashiach is. So therefore, obviously, it is something which is fundamental to everything. And yet there is very little. So that's what we're going to see. However, besides the beautiful, amazing bracha and prophecy of Mashiach, there's one last thing he does leave Balak with, and that's the idea of how to get the Jewish people. And that's the suggestion to get the Jewish people to see. Let's see, it's hinted to. Let's see what he says here. So he says, in Pasuk Yudalit, the Ata, Hinini Hailech La'am, now I will go to my nation, Lecha I'atzcha. So look what he says, come, I shall advise you. You can see just in those words, Eitza, an advice, that there's something that Bilam says that's a form of advice, right? He's giving him something. The Pasuk doesn't tell us what. But based on the story that happens afterwards, we all understand what. We understand that these words allude to the fact that Bilam says to Balak, you want to get these people? Curses ain't going to work. What will work? If they sin. If they sin, Hashem will be upset with them. And if Hashem is upset with them, then something negative will happen and they will not be strong anymore and you will not have to be afraid of them. And as we mentioned, what does that mean? If they have division, so once they sin, they will have division, and then you don't have to worry about them anymore. But also, but in the words here, he says, I will advise you, and then he says, what these people will do to your people, ba'achris hayamim, at the end of days. Okay,
so this is very interesting because Balak is very afraid. He's afraid of this nation that's sitting out there, even though it's not such a strong nation. But why is he afraid of them? He's afraid of them based upon what has happened. The truth is, he has reason to be afraid. The Jewish people had left Egypt. We know what happened to the Egyptians, right? Hashem destroyed them. Although he could have left them alone. He was told that. If you leave them alone, nothing's going to happen to you. The Jewish people were commanded not to start up with the nation of Moab, and he knew that. It's just like now, you know, they're looking. They're looking to antagonize. So he was afraid because he was afraid. But what Bilaam tells him is, really, you shouldn't be afraid now. You have nothing to fear now. But even though they were commanded not to destroy you now, you should just know that the end of days will come, whenever that will be, and then maybe you do have what to be afraid of them, because they will take over the world. There's no question about it. And let's see, I'll just read a few of the psukim, and we're going to have to see next week more in depth. Yes, sure, Sylvia.
In Yud Aleph, it seems to me that even Balak believes in Hashem. It says,
I know.
Yeah,
he does. So there's a very big question. Does it mean, does he really believe in Hashem, or he just draws him in when he's, you know, when it suits him, so to speak, because he's trying to be to knock him down as much as he can. And what's the greatest way? If he's a prophet, yeah, exactly. So yeah, he could on one level or not. Yeah. Yeah, so it seems that Bilaam has some belief, but in such a distorted way, as you can see. Very distorted. I know. It is amazing, for sure. I mean, because he's obviously, if me or you would have experienced such a thing, if we want to say something and the opposite comes out of our mouth, not once, twice, three times, obviously something higher is running the world, right? So it has to be something's going into his head that there is a God, that he's not in control, that something's in control of him. Right, so it's eventually has to go in, on some level, not enough to make him, you know, not give this idea, but yeah, okay. So I just want to read, as I say, some of the psukim and see. As I said, it's hard psukim, but just a small introduction to the psukim. These are talking about the time of Mashiach, generally speaking, but that's a very general statement because there are other opinions. There are some opinions that this is talking about the time of David HaMelech, which is not so far away from then, right? And we know that what David HaMelech is unique for is that at the time of King David, and especially Shlomo HaMelech, his son, was the time when all of the Jewish people, it's the only time really, that we were all in the land of Israel, especially in the time of Shlomo HaMelech. We lived in the land of Israel. We were a sovereign nation. We owned our land and nobody ruled over us. But not only that, it says that all of the nations around Israel brought presence to Shlomo HaMelech. He was like the one, he was considered the ruling power of the time. At that time, in the time of Shlomo HaMelech, the superpower of the world was Israel. And it is, we say, an example of what will be in the time of Mashiach. And the beautiful way that the Nevi'im, that it's described when you look at the history of what happened during the time of Shlomo HaMelech, it's so magnificent, is how it says, Ish tachas gafnei, Ish tachas te'inasai. It just describes how the Jewish people lived. Everyone underneath their vineyard, you know, their grape tree, and the date tree, and the palm trees, and everybody was sitting just calmly and peacefully, and able to do mitzvahs, and learn Torah, and live a peaceful, beautiful, healthy life. And that was the time of Shlomo HaMelech. There wasn't poverty, there wasn't diseases. It's the time of Mashiach, really. That was like the one time that we had something similar to the time of Mashiach. Not 100%, definitely. There's still people passed away. There was still, I'm sure, small things. But it was the closest that the world came to what we will experience at the time of Mashiach. So according to some opinions, these psukim, when we read them, each one has two phrases. One phrase referring to the time of David and Shlomo, and specifically we talk about David as the king, because he's the one that sets the tone and actually teaches Shlomo what it means. I mean, he's the king, right? And then, and teaching the Jewish people how to serve Hashem. And one of the phrases, the second part of every pasuk, is referring to much later, the time of Mashiach. So let's see, and we will see that the second phrase of everyone is a little bit more than the first, because that's when we will really have everything in the most beautiful way. So let's see what he says here about the time of Mashiach. Vayisa Mishalai. So he declaimed his parable by Yaimar. So now we are on page 309. What does Bilam say? Similar introduction like he did to all the other ones. Na'um Bilam b'nai ba'ar. These are the words of Bilam, the son of Ba'ar. Na'um ha'gever shesum ha'ayin. The words of the man with the pierced eye. As we explained last time, he had one eye, or perhaps he had a closed eye. He didn't see it clearly. He was on the floor. He doesn't have the same vision that Moshe has clarity, but the bottom line is, what's going to come out of his mouth is absolutely magnificent. So what comes out of this man's mouth? Ne'um shaymeya imre kel, the words of the one who hears the sayings of Hashem. V'yadeya das elyayin, the one who knows the mind of the Supreme One. Machze shakai neifel v'glui enayim. We explained these psukim when we did it last time. So when it happens, he says, he's the one that sees the vision of Shakai while fallen and with uncovered eyes. So as we said, he was fallen. So again, he's not standing upright, but the words that are coming out of his mouth are very clear, and these are words of absolute amazing prophecy. Er'enu v'loy ato. I see it, but not now. Ashurenu v'loy karev. I view it, but it is not near. So you see, it's a double. What does it mean when you say not now and something that is not near? Which one is closer? The first one is not now, so it's not immediately now. Because David HaMelech lives a few hundred years after Bilam, right? The Jewish people hear Bilam. This is the end of, let's say, the beginning of the 40 years, whatever it is. So we have the 40 years in the desert, then the Jewish people go into the land of Israel. There is about 500 years from when they entered the land of Israel until David HaMelech. And David HaMelech is the one who prepares for the building of the first Beis HaMikdash. So obviously we're talking 500 years. So that's the first prophecy. But then when he says, I see it and it is not near, that's in a long way away. That's the time of Mashiach. And then what does he say? What will happen? What do I see? Darach Koichav Miyakov. A star shot forth from Yaakov. Just read the next verse. V'kam shevet miYisrael, and a rod has risen from Israel. And that's one. And let's see the next verse, and then I'll see in Rashi. Umachatz pasei mayav, and he shall strike down the extremities of mayav, the karkar kol bnei shes, and undermine all the children of shes. Now you can see here, why does he mention mayav? Because who's the one that hired in Balak, who was the king of Mayav, right? So who's the one that's worried about what the Jewish people will do? It is Mayav. So he is prophesizing here that the Jewish people will, at a certain point in time, yes, get rid of Mayav. There's no question about it. Mayav will be destroyed. And we have a fascinating story. It says that at the time of David HaMelech actually did conquer many of the nations that were right around Eretz Yisrael. Mayav, where it was, if you want to know now, it's where Jordan is. It's exactly like just on that side, you know, where Jordan. It's a whole different, interesting question about what Jordan really, what role Jordan plays as far as really the territorial land of Israel. We don't know exactly, but we say in the time of Mashiach, when they went into the land of Israel initially, they conquered seven nations. But when we say in the time of Mashiach, there's three more nations. They're called Keni, Knizi, and Kadmoni. It's not clear, but according to many opinions, that's the land that we now call the Jordan. And that will belong to us when Mashiach will come. No question about it. That's why they have to build new Arei Miklat there, whatever it may be. But Mayav is right there. Well, that's where Mayav is. So initially, but even before we get to there, it says in the time of King David, because he needed to provide security for the Jewish people, nothing is new. The nations around were constantly fighting, constantly starting up and causing tremendous havoc. So David HaMelech did have to provide security. And amongst one of the nations that he did conquer was the nation of Mayav. And it describes, it's actually a very sad story with Mayav, because initially, going back even before David was king, when David was running away from Shaul, you know, one of the places he ran at one point was to Mayav. Not only did he run there, but his parents ran there, and his siblings ran there. And the terror, everything that happens now happened, you know, it's all the same. They provided official refuge. They said, come, we'll protect you. David re-entered the land of Israel, right, secretly.
He left his family in Moab thinking they will be safe. What did the Moabites do? Killed them. Killed David's family. They killed them. So now, when David is actually king and he has the ability, it's time that they should pay for what they did. And it describes, and again, this is really a story to learn in the Navi deeper, why exactly, but the way it's described is quite interesting. What he did was, he took like a measuring rope, that's what it says, and it had like sort of three measures. I don't know if it was like three ropes length. And he made, these are the soldiers from Moab, not the soldiers. He made them lay down on the floor, and he measured two ropes lengths were killed, one rope length stayed alive. Two rope lengths killed, one rope length stay alive. Why? Well, it sounds horrible, and it's what's the point? Well, really, maybe he could have killed all of them. They were all soldiers, and they were all out to get us, right? But he didn't want to kill all of them. They became servants, and I guess they somehow he rehabilitated, I don't know, whatever. But why did he kill them? He killed them because they wanted to kill us. They were horrible, as we know. They killed his family. It wasn't a measure of revenge. It was a measure of the kind of people that they were. They weren't people that you can trust. Because they promised to protect. He goes into the land of Israel, and boom, they're killed. So you can't trust these people. So David HaMelech does this. And that's what he's hinting to here. This was already prophesied already by Bilam so many years before, that's what Balak will do. That's what David will do. Ummachatz, you see, Tasei Mayav. And he shall strike down the extremities of Mayav. So it means he will strike down a portion. Machatz, he will divide. So two-thirds dead, one-third alive. As we say, the soldiers, the other ones were brought in, and whatever happened to them is whatever. But anyway, the point is that you can see that these prophecies, some of them happened. Then the end of the pasuk, the karkar called Bnei Sheis, and undermine all the children of Sheis. Who's Sheis? We'll just finish with this, and then next week we're going to go more into depth to understand. But who is Sheis? Remember from the original, going back in time, the beginning of creation.
Seth was the son.
Adam Arishan's done, right? So there was Cain, there was Hevel, and there was Sheis. Where do we all come from? Sheis, because Cain killed Hevel, and as we said, the curse was, Cain, you're not going to have descendants. That's when Adam had the third son. So when it says, Karkar kol b'nei Sheis, they use the word undermine. Next week we'll see the different words to use, whether it be destroy, whether it be whatever. What does it mean? It means everybody, right? The whole world. There is an opinion, and I don't like to leave it like this, but we'll just say it anyways. There is an opinion that this prophecy is, I know this was like, you know, that's what they say now. I remember when Netanyahu, at the beginning, used the word Amalek, so they say genocide. Well, there is an opinion that when Mashiach will come, there will not be anybody left except for the Jewish people. That is one opinion. Not one, actually, it's a few. There are, I just want to tell you though, there are other opinions, and that the opinion of the Rambam is not that way. The opinion of the Rambam is that all of the nations of the world who are good, all the good amongst the nations of the world, let's put it that way, because there isn't any full nations that are good, but all the good, the Hasidei Umas HaOlam, they will still remain, no question about it, but they will be transformed, and they will all take upon themselves to understand and to realize that there's one God, right? And therefore, everybody will be serving one God, and that's why there will be peace in the world. They will live properly. So when it says v'karkar kol b'nei Sheis, it means either that they will be wiped out because they're so negative, or it means that they will be undermined. In other words, the negativity will be undermined, and only the positive will remain. Next week we will look in depth to understand what this means. And there's a beautiful sicha of the Lubavitcher Rebbe where he goes into depth to analyze all the different, you know, opinions, and he says, how could we say that all the nations will be destroyed? We say in Ashrei V'toyv Hashem Lakol V'rachamav Al Kol Masav, Hashem is good and He has compassion on all of His creations, and as Jews we believe that. So we are not out, we're not any genocide, we don't do anything like that. If anything, we only protect people. However, we have to also realize that there is always good and there is something negative. We cannot gloss over and say everything is good, because not everything is good. And the negativity does need to be wiped out.
does that mean the person? Not necessarily, but the negativity does need to be. And if we don't identify the fact that something is negative, well, then we are in big trouble, as you can see now. So, just to end, as I said, it's a very bad way to end, but in Mirza Hashem, next week in Mirza, we'll go more in depth to understand, but you can already see that some of this is already happening, and it's the beginning, and in Mirza Hashem, will happen that there will be, as we say, David HaMelech was already, and Mashiach is coming, and we will not remain the people that are stepped on by everybody else. We will, because we stand for what's right, what's godly, what's good in the world, and that's what we want to spread. And in Mirtz Hashem, that will happen very soon. So we're just waiting. Yes.